Here, I'll get made twice a year.
Okay. Yeah, that sheet's very small, but it's okay. You're not going to have to read it too much. It's also available online. So, last year, it's interesting, when I passed these out, people were like, oh, this year again, which is kind of funny because I actually made a shear out of this sheet. The shear was about something else, but I'm gratified that it's remembered. I was actually really gratified because I wanted to... I'm using the sheet as a foil. That's interesting. As a foil to talk about something else. But I went to go find it because I didn't remember which website I used to make it. So I went to Facebook because I had posted it on Facebook. And I realized this was actually kind of cool. Other people have posted it since me. and it's been viewed a couple hundred times. That's like a little scary. The internet's scary. I made it, yeah. I made it, and this is why I made it. So this is actually the first time I'm giving a share about the sheet. Let the record show. I made it because I'm sharing a personal experience here that I've extrapolated and assume everyone has had the same experience. This is logically, fallacious. It's called the fallacy of consumption. But at any rate... you can nod or you can shake your head to see where we're holding. I have at some point, many, many years in a row, like woken up and there's 250 plagues. And I'm like, I could have sworn there were 10. And I didn't know, like, how did we get here? Like, wasn't this about, there was like a farmer involved at some point? Like, what happened to Lavan? And it was like, oh my God, there's so many parts of the Haggadah and there doesn't seem to be like good transition points. It's kind of like in my own personal evolution of learning when I realized that like when you get the Art Scroll Gemara, there's this cool feature that the normal Gemara doesn't have, and it's these italicized transition notes. Like besides English is cool, but like more than the English, it's these transition notes that the Gemara doesn't have. So like the Haggadah doesn't have the transition notes, and it was so frustrating. So last year I sat down read a couple different Haggadahs, listened to a couple different shiurs, and I thought, like, hey, I can actually make sense of all this. And I tried to. And several people online think I did. If you have it, take a look. If you don't, take a look at someone next to you. Also, I'm going to steal yours. Or I'm going to share with you and Abby. Okay. I didn't invent anything here. Meta Haggadah was something I was inspired by a shiur by an article written by Reb Bednar, Shmori Rebbe. I actually link it at the bottom of the Makor sheet. He made this argument that the first part of the Haggadah is a Meta Haggadah. It's a Haggadah about the Haggadah, meaning it's where we talk about how we're going to talk about Yetzim Yitzrayim. Kind of funny. Very process-oriented. But think about it, and this was the argument, and this is the argument that kind of lays at the heart of this sheet, which is, Mani Shana opens the floor for questions. How is this mitzvah performed? By asking questions. And then Avaydi Mahinu, who must perform? How long should it take? Does this mitzvah apply the rest of the year? The four sons is a lesson in, teaching different sons in different ways. So, and all of that is just a lead up to the actual Haggadah, which is the Farmer's Declaration, which we'll talk about shortly. So I feel a little gratified by this. But over the course of the year, actually probably happened within the course of Pesach, because I probably forgot about it right after. But over the course of Pesach, and it was a lovely Pesach, I realized there were pieces of this sheet that made me upset, that I felt were cop-outs. And you know what? I'm going to open the floor. Are there any parts of the sheet that don't look as neat and clean as the nifty mind map builder would lead you to believe? This is a fun exercise for me. Please openly criticize as heavily as you can. I prefer Shakespearean type insults, highbrow.
You saucy boy.
Huh?
You saucy boy.
That is something other than Shakespeare.
It's in Shakespeare. It's in Romeo and Juliet.
Got him.
It's been recorded.
Oh,
really?
Oh, I respond.
No? Okay.
Thank you, Robert.
Oh, my God.
No one's feeling it? All right, I'll tell you what, I'll tell you what the problems are.
Apparently.
So, look. If you look at number two, I labeled transition. Right. It's really nifty and neat to talk about meta haggadah that's followed by haggadah. Then what? What did I do with Mitzchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah and V'hisha Amda? I just labeled a transition because I had no idea. Because it's clearly not the meta haggadah anymore because we're not talking about the Haggadah, but it's not the Tzeilmad part, which is like the heart of the Haggadah either. I label that transition. That was one huge major cop-out, and the other major cop-out is Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel, I didn't even make it a dark red box. Does everyone see what I'm referring to? Okay, Rabban Gamliel is towards the end of the Haggadah. It's like the second to last tree branch or something. But from your own experience, you've all been through the Haggadah some, you know, close to 20 times or 20 times around now. Maybe the first couple times you really weren't paying attention, and like first 10 times you like kind of weren't paying attention. Okay, but Rabban Gamliel has this novel idea that we should talk about kind of like props, the Seder, the items. You know, if you kola, you know, whoever doesn't say Pesach Matzamaror didn't do the Seder at all. Okay, so that's clearly very serious. Rabban Gamliel means that to be, it almost sounds like that's Rabban Gamliel's Seder. At Rabban Gamliel's Seder, this is what they do. They talk about the Pesach, they talk about the Matzah, they talk about the Maror. Right? It seems that way, at least from the part of the Haggadah we read about, and we're going to see it inside, God willing. But I didn't know what to do with it, because it didn't fit into my nifty little meta Haggadah followed by transition, followed by farmer's declaration. So I left it there. So I'm going to Now that we've declared what's wrong with this, I'm hoping that by the end of tonight, with some inspiration from Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon, who gave a shiur on this topic that I like very much and was inspired much of tonight, we will touch up a little bit of the loose ends. So let's first look at what the source for the Haggadah is, right? If you crack open a Gemara Pesachim, you're not going to find the Haggadah in there, but you will find people talking about the Haggadah, which, you know, if you're interested in dating the publication or, I don't know, the compilation of the Haggadah, so this will be a very interesting exercise for you, right? Because in the Gemara Pesachim, they're talking about different people's Haggadahs, so have fun. Does anyone have an extra source sheet?
Yeah.
There's other ones. Yeah, that one. Yeah. Oh, that's a big pile. It's so nice. One's enough, thank you.
Okay. Sometimes
people want multiple. I suppose so. Okay. Mazgulo they pour the Seder leader the second cup. What happens after the second cup is poured? Anyone remember? Magid Manishana. Yeah, same thing. Manishana opens the, except for Halachmania, which is clearly late. Why do we know that it's late? It's a late insertion?
Aramaic.
It's Aramaic, okay. So, not that it's, you know, you skip it, I'm not saying that, but I am saying that it's a late insertion, and if we're trying to figure out what the Gemara is talking about, we can skip over Halachmania.
Are you saying the rest of Haggadah proceeds when Aramaic was vernacular? Like, it's that old?
It's in Hebrew. The whole thing's in Hebrew.
I thought about that.
Yeah. It wasn't the most edgy thing I've ever said, but. Yeah. Actually, Taka, it's like very firm. Say, like, no, it's older. But it is. It's all in Hebrew.
Aramaic at the same time?
They were. They were speaking. But think of Hebrew. At the time that Aramaic was spoken commonly, Hebrew was more of the scholastic language. Not like Latin, yeah. Latin, but kind of like Latin.
It was written after
what, the Haggadah? Complicated, but, you know, we can figure that out later. Okay, but anyway, Mazgul Kosheni. So what happens after they pour the second cup? So, by the way, pretend this is the first time you're at your Seder, ever. You've never been to a Seder. You've been to Shabbos many times, but you've never been to a Seder. So how does the Seder start? You pour a glass of wine, everyone raises it, and the person leading the Seder says Kiddush. Okay, everyone, okay, very nice. So there's like a little bit of leaning action, right? But also remember that if we're doing this properly, the leaning is not awkward. It's more like a like a comfortable lean. Like imagine like you're a Roman governor and you're on a sofa and someone's feeding you grapes and they're like, hold on, I need to make kiddush kind of thing. Like no one's noticing that Haseba's weird. By the way, Haseba as one of the four questions, leaning as one of the four questions, is also a late insertion. We'll talk about that later. We might not. If I don't talk about that later, ask me. Okay, so you don't really notice the leaning, that's not a big deal, but someone makes kiddush and then everyone goes and washes their hands, they're like, I know what I'm doing, this is easy. You go, you wash your hands, you don't notice no one's making a bracha, maybe they are making a bracha. And then you come back and they like pull off the something cover and there's parsley. Or if you live in Elizabeth, New Jersey, there's bananas. What is, I know. Like what's going on here?
What?
Yes. Very good. And you're like, what are the bananas doing here? And everyone makes bracha on bananas. And you're like, well, this is literally insane. And then they pick up the challah, and they're like, by the way, this is the challah we're going to eat tonight. And they rip it in half. Okay, they rip it in half because matzahs used to be soft. And if you go to Brooklyn, they still are soft. So, okay, it's not breaking so much as ripping. They rip it in half. You're like, ah, you can't do that. Didn't like anyone ever tell you that you're not allowed to do that? Sorry? The screaming?
No.
Dramatic play.
No.
Okay. And you like break in half, you're like, oh my god, you're not supposed to do that. And then you're like, okay, we're gonna eat and we'll talk about this over the food, and then they pour a second glass of wine and you're like, this is crazy. Right? And what happens at that point?
You're like, what the heck is going on?
Then you start asking questions. They pour in the second cup. And this is where the son asks the father. I'm going to make a little detour here to make a plug that's not part of the shiur, okay? But bear with me, if you will. But this is important. If you forget the shiur and remember this, it's good. If you forget this and remember the shiur, also good. If you remember both, great. But I'm saying, like, this is so good, what I'm about to say now, you can pass out after and I'll feel okay about it. Kan haben shoel aviv. Who in your family, raise your hand if in your family the oldest person asks the manishana. Raise your hand if your family, if the youngest person says the manishana, or asks the manishana, sings the manishana. Okay, raise your hand if in your family the youngest person sings the manishana. Okay, can someone ask me a great question?
What's the point of it all?
Okay, Abby, thank you for asking that question. Would you mind singing it? But before you do you mind getting up on your chair?
Yes, I mind. And I'm not doing it.
Well, that's so weird, because in my family, the custom is that if you ask a great question, you have to get up on a chair and sing it. Does that seem ridiculous to anybody else?
No.
You put it that way.
No.
I'm not sure if everyone does standing on the chair.
It doesn't seem ridiculous that I'm going to make you...
No, because it's become part of a liturgy. It's become part of the...
Can you stand on the chair and sing that?
Yeah, but my question is temporal. It's a one-time question. Once it's part of the Haggadah, why do we sing after?
And that's exactly the problem. It's exactly the problem. Thank you, Jared Cray, for pointing out exactly the problem. You are clearly feeding me fodder. We've ritualized the act of asking questions. I actually like tore Kriya when I got to my daughter's preschool and they were making like Manishtana packets. I didn't actually tear Kriya, and I love my daughter's preschool a lot. But the notion that we've designed a Seder to inspire people to freak out, and then we pay people to give the secrets away in advance, it's so mind-boggling to me, right? Like, the point of Manishana, if you look here, the point of Manishana is supposed to actually inspire questions in a deep and real way. So much so, by the way, no one's ever read this before. It's crazy. Mazgula kosheni v'kan haben shoel aviv. Here, the son asks the father. So, who asks the questions?
Son.
Great. Okay. Awesome. Except v'im ein dapa ben. But if the son is stupid, aviv malamdo, then the father should teach him. What should the father teach him? Manishana halayla hazeh. So who asks the questions?
The father.
The son asks the questions. Who says manishana?
The father.
The father. We got it all backwards. Manishtana is what you say to the son, is what you teach the son, if the son's not asking questions. Meaning, epis. There's no word for that in English. Epis, the point of the Seder. The whole, like, the grand vision of the Seder is how can we inspire the next generation to ask questions of us. That's it. I mean, no, there's a lot of other things going on. But at the outset of the Maggid, our great enterprise is to inspire our children to ask questions. Even questions that don't necessarily relate directly to Yetzirah Mitzrayim. We just want to get them in a place where they're asking questions. And it's like, it's a crazy to me that we, like, at some point, somewhere along the way, decided to have the child sing it instead of the father teaching it. Because clearly, I mean, like, the mission was written, they were it's descriptive and prescriptive. So this is what was going on at the time, right? At some point along the way, it switched from the father saying, hey, did you notice all the different things tonight? Did you notice that there's no bread? Did you notice that there's maror? Did you notice all these things? Like, hey, yeah, I noticed that. At some point along the way, it switched from that to the youngest child singing Manishtana, turning red in the face, everyone cheering, and American Judaism dying in front of our eyes. Any questions? Have I inspired questions? Okay.
No,
back this year.
We're all afraid to ask questions.
You're just going to be proud of Vivi when she sings it, right?
You know I will. What can I say? I'm a son of American Judaism.
Thank you, Rivka.
It's probably European. Thank you, European Judaism. Okay. Okay, fine. But here we see the structure. This Gemara details for us what the structure of the Haggadah is. Okay? After you pour the second cup, then you say the Manishtana. Manishtana halayla zem yikol haylot. And then it lists the four questions. Shebacholot ano chlim chametz mutzah. Yada yada. You know the questions. There's one question here that's different than the question you're used to. We're not going to make a big deal out of it. Jump to like the second to last line. Pam achat halayla hazeh shtei pamim. On all the nights we dip once, and this time we did twice. Lufida atoshal ben aviv malamdo, and according to the level of knowledge, the level of understanding of the child, the father, the parent teaches. Matchil big period, full stop. Matchil begnut umesayem b'shvach b'shevach. Well, that's how they pronounce it in yeshivas, but that's another European thing. Okay. Matchil begnut umesayem b'shevach. You know what's also funny, by the way? The word godless means opposite things in Hebrew and in English. You know, right? you begin with disgrace, you begin with shame, and you end with praise, right? It begins with with shame and ends with praise. Anyone know what disgrace? Okay, hold on. You guys are all too smart. The Doresh Me'arami Ovid Avi Ad She'igmor Kola Parsha Kula. And you darshan, meaning you don't just read the psukim, you actually learn out the psukim from Arami Oved Avi until you finish that parsha, which is kind of funny, the phraseology there, because that parsha is four psukim in total. The parsha we're referring to is in Ki Tavo, which is the first time that the Torah has like a concise recollection of Yetzirah Mitzrayim, which is kind of cool if you think about it. What would be the more obvious text?
Shmot,
because that's when it happens, but we wanted to make sure that...
You
get to the food. We don't want to die. Sorry?
This is Reuven de Gain shtick, that it's like a story. It's the first time a story is like a story of a story.
Right. The more pragmatic answer is we wanted to make sure people wouldn't die of hunger. There are probably more high-minded and forward-thinking and visionary answers. And they're all correct. Okay. Okay, so... this is the structure of the Haggadah that's given to us by the Gemara, right? What do I know about the Haggadah? I know there's a thing called Manishtana. There's some kind of there's a question session followed by Manishtana that we're supposed to tell a story that starts with our disgrace, starts with disgrace and ends with praise, and that I'm supposed to darshan out a couple of psukim in Dvarim, in Parsha Ki Tavo. Okay. What does Gnut and Shevach mean? Join me in the next Makor. It's actually in the same Daf Gemara, but it's a little farther down. Ma'ay b'gnut. What does it mean, Gnut? What does it mean, disgrace or shame? Rav Amar mitchila ode avodot galilim hayu avotinu. In the beginning, we were idol worshippers, or our fathers were idol worshippers. Ushmuel Amar avadim hayinu. Shmuel says, no. It has to do with being slaves. Excuse me. That's the end of this makor. The rest of the paragraph belongs to another makor, but I just want it's Safari is. I'm not going to say anything too important.
No?
Okay, what are the two answers for Gnut and Shevach?
Idolatry.
Okay, great. Huh? I'm sorry. Very good. What are the two questions? What are the two options for Gnut?
Idolatry and slaves.
Great. And which one do we go with in our Haggadah?
Slavery.
Idolatry.
Both.
Oh, it depends on how you go to Armi Avedavi, no?
Both.
This is so awesome. Ah, so we're learning things even at this point this year. Ready? Where's your Haggadah? Where's my Haggadah? Are there extra Haggadahs?
What?
Here, do you have one?
Oh, yeah.
Good, use it.
I didn't realize it was a Haggadah.
Okay. If you look at your Haggadah, by the way, English is on the back. By the way, this is like, this is straight from Rabbi Moon, but it is just a normal Haggadah. Avadim ayinu leparo b'mitzrayim. Number one, there's a little one. Okay. We were slaves to Paro in Egypt. Who's that pasquin like? Okay, and then look at number two. Mitchila ovdei avodah zarah hayu avoteinu. Who's that pasquin like? Oh my God, we literally have both. They're actually quoting from their own. Do you see that in the Gemara? Right? Rav Amar Mitchila ovdei avodat gelulim hayu avoteinu. If you trade gelulim from kochavim, which is a fair trade, he's literally quoting our text of the Haggadah. Shmuel says, avadim hayinu, etc., etc., which is also a direct quote from our Gemara. So we actually feature both. I am tickled that most of you at the table thought it was one or the other. We go like both.
What?
You weren't loud enough. Go back to Elizabeth.
40 minutes out.
Why do we go like both?
Yes, a variety.
You're literally sitting right next to the microphone.
It's true.
It is. Why do we go like both?
Because we're not sure. They're both right.
Because we often make compromises.
Okay, so this is not a compromise.
Right.
This is
we often
try to make everyone happy. Okay, Gavi's like a brisker or like a Haredi Acharon. He wants to make sure we fulfill as many shitas as possible. And that's what we're doing. And Eli, you're what?
I don't know.
What was your answer?
They're both right.
Ooh.
Can I make a moment and say,
okay,
it's
so but one thing I want to okay one one seed that I want to plant though, Eli. So Eli says they're both right. It could be true. We have this Gemara that is better known than other Gemaras, fortunately or unfortunately, about truth and multiple things being right. Okay, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. Crack open your local Orthodox Eruvin. And right, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. Ve, what's the next word?
The
halacha kevet hilal. Okay, so it's true. I mean, it depends how you read this Gemara, but it is the case that we do believe that sometimes more than one thing is correct, but we usually, nevertheless, go with one of them. So, isn't it odd? And we've been doing this for a long time. Even though the Gemara doesn't say who we conclude like, Rabbi Hananel is very, very early Rishon, pre Rashi, says that we go like both. So we've been going like both forever. Sorry. Did he live in Bavel? I don't think so, but he was in that same time period. Someone can fact check me. Okay, so question number one is like, why doesn't the things in my tree chart don't work, like the things I'm upset about. Question number two is, why do we do both? When usually we would pick one and run with it. Question number three, we glossed over the questions. So the questions in the Manishtana, right? One of them is Matzah Maror. One of them is Leaning. One of them is... one's Matzah, one's Maror, right? Okay. Do we ever ask for the answer?
No.
No, weird. Like, we demand questions we don't have an answer to.
No, but I mean, that makes sense in your original.
I mean, we say Avadim Hayinu
Leparo B'Mitzrayim. The whole point, if you say that the whole point of the Manishtana is just to introduce questions to the kid who's supposed to have questions himself. I mean, like, by the same token, we never, like, if another kid has questions throughout the meal, like, and we didn't say Manishtana, like, old school, then, like, we don't answer those either.
Is it why?
Gavi made my day by understanding what I said.
Is it why is this night different, or how is this night different?
Good question. We're not going to get to the bottom of that right now.
Four questions are technically answered.
Okay. Fair. Here's the point that I want to make, though. Everything both of you said, all of you, really, but especially both of you said, is correct. I want to point out to one question that looks different, though, which is actually, I think the point's made. We're just going to move right along. But here's the question that's different, right? Why do we eat matzah? We eat matzah because we were chased out of Egypt early. Okay. Why do we eat the Korban Pesach? You know, same story. Why do we eat maror? Because our lives are bitter. Why do we lean? Sorry, I know what we lean. I take it back. Why do we dip twice?
So the children should ask.
Says a prichadash. Very good. We literally ask a question. We literally ask a question that has no answer. Which at some point in my life used to frustrate me. I felt like that's very circular. Like, you know, it's a story. But a friend of mine in college, he was running his family seder, and at some point, you know, you lift the matzahs, you put down the matzahs, you cover the matzahs, you take them on the... And like at some point, his uncle was like, why do we do that? And he's like, so the children will ask. So it's, you know, at the time it was like, that's ridiculous. We shouldn't do things that have no point. But if the point is to inspire questions, then we can appreciate this. In fact, look at source. It would be number 3 if it was numbered. Tzachim kuf tet vav amud bet. Lama okrin et ha-shulchan. The Sepharia doesn't have English for this section. If you want to be the tzaddik or tzedeket who plugs it in, then, you know, then God be with you. Lama okrin et ha-shulchan. Why do they uproot the table? Who uproots tables? Back in the days of the Talmud, everyone ate off of TV trays. That is not an example I realize you can use anymore, because I don't think anyone here has like seen... Yeah, TV trays? Okay. Whatever, you know, they're like shtenders. Like shtenders. Like they had shtenders. And like 30, 40 years ago in America, they had shtenders to eat dinner off of. Everyone watched TV together. They thought that was a good way to bring the family together. That worked out super well. Lama okrin et ha-shulchan. Why do we uproot the table? Meaning what they would do is they would take everyone's table away. And I'm like, oh my God, give me my table back. I'm hungry. You're not going to give me food for 2 hours anyway. That way the children will notice. Vishalu. And they'll ask. Okay. So that's literally why we take the matzah. The reason we take the matzah, cover, uncover, whatever it is, that's it's a leftover modern version of we don't have TV trays anymore, so we do it with the matzahs instead of the tables. Abaye hava yativ kameh deraba. Abaye, when he was little... was sitting with Rabba. Abaye was when he was little, I mean, also when he was older, he was an orphan, he was raised by his uncle. So you'll notice Abaye and Rabba and Rav Yosef mentioned a lot together, because they lived with each other. Chaza daka midli taka midakame. Okay, so he saw this going on. Amar luhu, adayin lo ka achlinan. Wait a second, we haven't eaten yet, like little Abaye, so... I'm so cute. It's like, he's, you know, he's going to live a life of asking tremendous questions. And he started as a youth saying, like, why are you taking my table away? Like, I'm hungry. Atukame kreitaka mikamin amar le rabba patartan milomor manishtana. So it says, that's great, thank you. Now we don't have to say manishtana, which, by the way, perfectly buttresses the point that I made before, which is that manishtana is meant to inspire the children. Okay, so... Thank you. Think of like a fortress. You buttress a fortress. Okay, here's my next big question. Okay, so what do we know so far? We know so far that there's a structure to the Haggadah, that you're supposed to ask questions, and you're supposed to start with Gnut and with Shevach. And which Gnut do we begin with? In our Haggadah, we begin with both. We actually have 2 Haggadahs. We learn 2 Haggadahs as part of our Haggadah. So here's another question that's troubled me for a long time. And I actually, meaning like I taught this Rav Chaim, and I kind of in the back of my head didn't want anyone to ask me questions about it. Actually, a couple years ago, it was before I came to Brandeis even, gave a shiur on Pesach. It was a lot of fun. And the upshot of the shiur, okay, there's a famous machlokas that actually kind of is a reference in our Haggadah, that we say, we recall Yetzim Yitzrayim, how often?
Every day.
Every night. Every day. Every night. All the time.
Always.
Okay, so what is the mitzvah of the night in terms of recalling Yetzim Yitzrayim if we already have? Meaning we have a mitzvah called Zecher. Excuse me? And we have a mitzvah called Sipur. Yes.
It's different because it's Ki'ilu, it's not Tzatzim.
So this one's we're getting into it, and Zecher is just like we're talking about it. So very good. Rav Chaim Brisk has a similar answer. I say, you know, that's a component of it. He says that Zecher is something that we state, and Sipur is something that we arrive at through the process of question and answer, right? So what Noam said is dead on, right? Part of it is getting into it, part of it is experiencing, part of it is, right? But Sipur is a drawn-out process. Remember, we don't read Arami Oved Avi, we are Doresh Arami Oved Avi, okay? But according to Rav Chaim, the mitzvah of the night can only be arrived at, this is what, I don't know, you're writing notes down, of what I said so far, this is what you have to write down. The mitzvah of the night can only be via question and answer. So here's what troubled me in the back of my head. I didn't want anyone to ask me, which is, okay, it'd be very nice if this like grand vision of how
there's
the Manishana is going to work.
No answers.
I don't think there's not. This isn't what troubled me. The lack of answers didn't trouble me. The lack of questions did. Meaning, Tanakh would be awesome if the entire night was just the kids asking questions to the parents, or the parents asking questions to each other, and like somehow arrive at a greater understanding of a team of Shrine. Maybe you guys have a Seder like this, but like in my Seder, and every Seder I've been to, 90% of the Seder is people reading the Haggadah, right? We just read the Haggadah. How many questions do we actually ask? How do we arrive at the optimal way of reading Sipur Yetzi Mitzrayim through question and answer if we're asking very few questions? Doodaloo. Sorry?
Well, I mean, I think it's not a common thing, I think. You're going to be able to hear it if you listen to the No one else can hear them. But
not for anybody else's benefit.
But about your, I mean, again, like your own like tangent about Manishana. The whole point here is that like.
Did I make the tangent too early? Did I answer too many questions? Maybe.
No,
but at least you guys got it. I'm so happy.
The whole point is that like the questions aren't supposed to be factored into the Seder because they're supposed to naturally arise from the kids. They only should be factored into the Seder if the kids don't have any questions.
Okay. Great. So we're
so like
all, the questions shouldn't be ritualized. It shouldn't be embedded to the Haggadah. But the problem is that the author of the Haggadah wanted us to read the Haggadah in a certain way in order to fulfill Sipur Yetzi Mitzrayim.
Sipur itself has to have questions.
Apparently,
that's
Rav Chaim Brisk's great answer.
Okay, so it's a separate point.
Yeah.
Okay.
So number one, I'm looking for my questions, and number two, last thing in terms of structure presented by the Bavli, and then we'll actually, God willing, dig into the Haggadah in a more serious way. I told you don't read the rest of the Makor, that's from the next Makor, it's in number two. Amarlei Rav Nachman, it's the second line, right? We said Matcheh B'Gnut, Masayim B'Shevach, then we recorded two different answers for what Gnut means. Amarlei Rav Nachman, Ledaru. Go dwell. Just kidding. Daru is the name. Daru is the name of Avdei, is the name of his slave. So Rav Nachman had a slave, like Thomas Jefferson. Avdei demafik la mare. A slave, this is the question he posed to, is it a question? Yeah, it's a question. The question he posed to his slave Daru at the Seder, he says, is a master who frees his slave, lecherut, v'yehiva kaspa v'dahava, and he gives him silver and gold. My baila meimarle. What do you think? For a second, saying this to a slave seems kind of terrible. If a slave were to be freed and given gold and silver, what would the slave say back? Amarle, bai la duye ul shabachuhi, v'la shbuchi. He should praise and praise him. Two synonyms for praise. He should say all kinds of wonderful things about his master, right? Amarle, patatan mila molar manishana. You could end the Makor before the Amarle, but I wanted to share with you another place in Shas where they got out of manishana by asking a question. Okay, so the last thing that we need to know about the Bavli, Bavli's presentation of the Haggadah, the bigger structure of the Haggadah, right? Eyes on the prize. Eyes on the prize is you're going to look at the Haggadah and you're going to understand all the parts of it and why every single piece is where it's supposed to be. When someone is freed from slavery, their response should be praise. Their response should be that they're so overwhelmed and ecstatic that they're going to praise their master. The former master. No?
If you're going to use the analogy, then it's no one's praising Paro, we're praising God.
Okay. Yes, that's interesting. Fascinating. Okay. Now, we have two Haggadahs that we're looking at, right? We have the Haggadah of Rav and the Haggadah of Shmuel. We have the Haggadah of Avadim Hayinu and the Haggadah of Mitchila of the Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hayu, Avotinu. Is there Shevach at the end of Avadim Hayinu, at the end of Rav's Haggadah. Sorry, that's Shmuel's. Yeah, Shmuel's Haggadah is the first one. Is there any praise at the end of Shmuel's Haggadah? No, they end. Shmuel's Haggadah ends, and then Rav's picks up. No, because here, Shmuel's Haggadah begins at Mitchila. So you need to find me. Sorry, did I say ends? Starts. Starts over here, Mitchila. Can you find any praise between the beginning of the Haggadah and Mitchila? Anytime we're praising Hashem, or thanking Him for giving us something. Like a Soira. Like Soira's Emes.
Actually, the only people we praise are the ones who really, like,
Darshan
the Haggadah.
Baruch
HaMakom, Baruch Abigail?
Okay,
take home the prize. Yes, Ellie.
Could you say that Halach Ma'anya sort of praise?
I don't think it's a praise, but also...
Implicitly.
Also, remember the Halach Ma'anya is late. So, Rav is saying his Haggadah, and Shmuel is saying his Haggadah, and the question is... Is there Shevach embedded in their Haggadahs? Apparently, there is. So Shmuel listened. I keep... Say,
wait, hang on.
Hold on.
The
Rav is... Yes, Shmuel.
The paragraphs of Avadei Hayinu and Mitchila Avadei Zara, those are their entire Haggadahs? Or those are just the segments at the beginning of the Gnut that we're putting in?
Let's find out. Hold on. Okay, so first we start with questions. We start with Manishtana. Then we have Shmuel's Haggadah, Avadim Hayinu, which is followed by Shevach, right? Because Chayav Adam, what was the Dara's words? Lo duye lo shpuchui. Lo shpuchui. Okay? And the shpuchi is Baruch HaMalkam Baruch Hu, Baruch HaTantara Lama Yisrael, Baruch Hu. Oh, that's awesome. Okay. Is there... Let me ask another question. What immediately precedes Avadim Hayinu? What immediately precedes Shmuel's Haggadah?
Manishtana.
In other words?
Questions.
Questions, awesome. Are there questions that precede Rav's Haggadah?
Yeah.
Which ones?
Four sons.
Oh! What am I going to do when you graduate? Mitchila of the Avodah Zara is part of Rav's Haggadah. I'm going to keep doing this. Feel free to call me on it. It's part of Rav's Haggadah, but it's not where it begins. It begins with questions, just like Rav's does. Keneged arba banim dibra Torah. Ah, thank you. Someone give me a pen. Thank you.
Oh, you wrote that down?
No, I'm writing Shmuel right next to the... Shmuel? Rav. Very good. The first one's Shmuel, right?
Yeah, is it?
Yes.
That's what I wrote.
Yes.
It shouldn't be
really. Don't do that, Ellie. I mean, Robert. Okay. Both begin with questions. One set of questions is Manishana, and one is, can I get Arba Banim? Each Ben has a question, except for one. So we have at least three questions in there. Okay? And end with praise. So Baruch HaMakom is a praise of Shmuel. What's the praise of Rav? Excellent. Blessed is God who keeps His promise to Israel. Is a outpouring of excitement and praise at the end of Rav's Haggadah. Okay, and specifically, what are we referring to? In the Baruch Shomer.
Freeing us from slavery.
Sorry. We're in the second column. We're at Baruch Shomer Haftachat Tole Yisrael. I'm going to be more conscientious about identifying where we are. I take for granted, I've been looking at the Haggadah for a couple days. Okay. So, hold on a second. What's Vihisha Amda? Who's standing up? There's a woman. There's a woman standing up somewhere at the Seder. Vihisha Amda. She stood up.
The
Who's he? Oh, the Haftacha. Okay. So the Haftacha. What is the Haftacha?
That God will save us.
Awesome. Do you know where God made that Haftacha? Free Bin Mitzrayim. Awesome. It's in Breishit Tedvav, according to the Sakata. And according to Hosha. According to the Archbishop of Canterbury. He's the one who made the chapters.
Oh.
Sorry. Yes.
I
in order to facilitate disputes between Jews and Christians.
And in order to just mess up the order of everything ever.
Right, or between Jews and John Kasich.
It's the second reference tonight.
What was first?
You made one early, I don't remember.
I don't think it's true. But if I was going to, I'd definitely talk about the Paschal Lamb. Who is the Paschal Lamb? Okay. Okay, so here we have two self-contained Haggadahs, okay? They both start with questions. They both are followed with a story that takes us from Gnut to Shvach, Shevach, and they end with a praise. And they end with a praise. Now, I promised you that that at any point in your Maggid, at home, you will pass out, you will wake up, you will know exactly where you are. In fact, let's raise the stakes. I'm going to guarantee, Blee Netter, that you'd be able to more or less put the Gada together with your eyes closed, at least the paragraph headings, the chapter headings, okay? Because it's actually going to make sense by the end of this hour. Following the Hisha Amda, okay, so that's a praise.
Hisha Amda is a Shevach?
Hisha Amda is a Shevach, yeah.
In Rav Sagada.
In Rav Sagada, very good. Baruch Shomer is like the first half, and then the Hisha Amda is the second half, but it's one long paragraph. I mean, it's clear, it says Vahisha Amda. It's also clear it remains a shevach because we end by saying V'akadosh Baruch Hu Matzilenu Mi'adam. Isn't Hashem amazing? He's the one who saves us. I wanted to dedicate this year. I wanted to get this year. I just saw that there was a bus bombing in Israel, Chalila V'chas, bus number 12. I believe there are 3 people in critical condition and over 20 people who are injured. This is very scary. For all of us, that bus goes past where my sister lives, who is now in Los Angeles. But these words, V'akadosh Baruch Hu Matzilenu Mi'adam, Cholder V'dor, are painfully real. Pretend that happened at the beginning of this year. Now, we're going forward. Se'umat. Okay, now we're going to learn. What are we learning? Ma bikish Levan harami lasot le'Yaakov Avinu. Okay, why Levan exactly, we're not going to go into, but you can ask the people who came to Shir like a week and a half ago on Shabbat. Why exactly Levan? Okay, but what is it that we're about to do? We said that we promised we were going to do this in the Mishnah. Does anyone remember what we're about to do? We're at Se'umad.
Oh.
Go out and learn. What is it we're going
to
learn?
We're going to Darshan Psukim.
We're going to be Doresh Arami Ovet Avi. Okay? So that's the next stage. The next stage is the Gemara tells us that we have to be Doresh Arami Ovet Avi. And the reason we have to Doresh Arami Ovet Avi is because Arami Ovet Avi is 4 Psukim, and as opposed to the 12 chapters of Exodus, it would have to Doresh in order to get to the same place.
The reason we get, I mean, at least according to Rav Chaim, the reason that we have to have Dafka Drash Mekansh Ritura is because this is a Sibor, not a Zechira?
Yes.
Okay.
Very good. Right, okay. Besides the cuteness that it's short, it's not so cute, it's real. Besides the fact that it's short, it also allows us to tear it apart a little more, right? If you just read through the 12 chapters, the first 12 chapters of Exodus, so you know the story, but you wouldn't have dug into the story in quite the same way that you have to dig into when you are going through the Vidui Bikurim. Arami Ovid Avid, so this is what the farmer says when they bring their first fruit to the temple in Jerusalem. It's kind of a cool idea. Gavi mentioned Rav Nagan's idea that this is a story within a story, meaning this is Moshe in Zvarim is telling us what the farmer in Israel, the farmer doesn't exist yet, because farmers don't exist yet, there are no Jewish farmers yet, right? One day there will be a Jewish farmer who will look back and remember our story. It's kind of an inspiring thing when you think of it that way. Arami Ovid Avi, Vayad Mitzrayma, something, 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 translated differently by different people, and went down to Egypt, and lived there, and dwelled there, small in number, and became there a great nation, Atzum Verav. Maybe someone at your Seder is going to freak out because we use the word Goy to refer to Jews, and you can, like, start a conversation. Then we begin to go phrase by phrase. Vayered Mitzrayma, Anusal Pidibur, Vayagor Sham, Melamed Shalo, Yerad Yaakov Avinu, Lisha Kabib Mitzrayim, etc., etc. So we go phrase by phrase, we break down the phrase, and then we read the Midrash that the Baal Haggadah selected for learning out these psukim. Okay, and that goes until we get to the second pasuk. The second pasuk is Vayru Tanu Hamitri. Is anyone hot? Anything hot in here?
No?
Just me?
Okay.
Okay. You're freezing. I'm sorry. I apologize. Veirutana mitrim, so we get to the second pasuk, and the Egyptians, they were bad to us. Veitnilinu avodah kasha, and they made us work, and then we proceed to do the same thing. We go phrase by phrase, and we drash now. Veitzakel Hashem elokei avotenu, veyishma Hashem et kolenu, vayaret onyenu, veet amalenu, veet lachasenu. Third pasuk, we called out to God, and God heard us, and heard our suffering. And again, we go phrase by phrase. There's nothing, meaning all these phrases, this is great material for Dvar Torahs, but in terms of the structure is pretty straightforward here, right? We're going pasuk by pasuk, and we're going phrase by phrase, and breaking down what happens in, how to understand each phrase. This is where things get a little tricky, because now we break with the pattern a little bit. Because we continue the pattern, we say Vayotzeinu Hashem Mitzrayim, we do phrase by phrase, until we get to Davar Acher. So Davar Acher, where the third column, Davar Acher is towards the bottom before the 10 plagues, and this is where many people kind of, or myself when I was younger, kind of like, what's going on here? Why are we Davar Achering this? Davar Acher, alternative option. So here we actually present the plagues, two possibilities, right? One is that we're talking about them qualitatively. We're talking about the nature of the plagues, right? Vayotzeinu Adonai Mitzrayim, lo al yedei malach, lo al yedei seraph, lo al yedei shaliach. You know, these were delivered directly by God, not through a medium, not through an angel, not through a medium messenger, but by God himself. And then we get to Dever Acher, we switch gears and say, well, maybe this pasuk is referring to the plagues qualitatively, or maybe it's referring to the plagues quantitatively. Be'er Chazaka, Shtaim, Zor Netziah, Shtaim, right? There's five phrases here, and each one represents two plagues. And now let's talk about the plagues. Okay, so that's, in terms of structure, now, there's a lot more here, and there's actually a great article about this Davar Acher business that I can refer you to that I think totally revolutionized the way I thought about it, but we don't. I want to stick to structure. Dan Sfardei Akinim Arov Dever Shechin Varad Arbech Choshech Magad Becharot. 10 drops of... Okay, we're still darshing the fourth pasuk, and we're getting deeper into the fourth pasuk, but that's exactly where we are. We're in the fourth pasuk. Then we have the Rabbi Yossi Glili, and Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva have like a three-way cloak about exactly how many plagues there were, right? And they do some interesting, clever, fancy footwork, if you will, right? Because there's at one point the pasuk says Etzba Elohim, and the other place it says Yad Hashem. So Etzba is one finger, Yad is five fingers. Some people think four plus a thumb, they're wrong. Just because it's opposable doesn't make it not a finger. Okay, but so we start doing this multiplying trick. And there's a lot of good Dvar Torahs about why exactly we're doing the multiplying trick. Maybe we're doing the multiplying trick because we want to show Hashem how thankful we are for how many plagues we were spared from, right? Because whatever, when the plague of blood happened to the Nile, the Jews drank the Nile and turned from blood back into water, meaning any of the plagues that happened to the Egyptians did not happen to the Jews. So we're so thankful to Hashem for sparing us all these plagues, or that he's going to spare us these plagues in the future, because anything that Hashem did to Egypt in the past, he'll never do to us in the future. Whichever it is...
Nothing is mentioned in the Pacific.
Very good. Okay, so there we have. So okay, the end of darshaning the fourth pasuk is that paragraph that starts Rabbi Akiva, right? In the fourth column, there's a paragraph that starts Rabbi Eliezer. Then there's a paragraph that starts Rabbi Akiva. That's the third of the three paragraphs in Machlokas about how many plagues exactly were wrought upon the Egyptians, and we follow with Dayenu. What if I had to categorize Dayenu as something? What would I? Oh my God! Say that louder.
Shavach.
Louder.
Shavach.
It wasn't even snarky. Okay. Here we have another instance of shavach.
Why
are we?
Why are we the shavach of Rav Shmuel? I was going to ask this before in a different way, but like, why do we insert Rav Shmuel's entire haggadah? Like, Rav Shmuel basically have a machloket about what the gnud is that we're masil with.
Hold your question. Hold your question. I love your question. Hold it. Show me your question.
I was just say like if
no, hold it.
Oh,
right here. I want you to ask me that question in a little bit. I want to speed through the rest of the haggadah, and then we're going to answer Gavi's question, and maybe even drive Gavi to like
the brink of
tears. tears of joy. I was hoping for. Okay, we are followed by Dayenu, and then we're followed by a paragraph that's more or less Dayenu in prose as opposed to poem. Then we're followed by Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel, as you know, tortured me.
Should we write that down as Shevach? Is that basically how your short-term...
Don't write anything down yet.
Okay.
Just hold them. Hold those questions. But don't do that to your children. Hold that question! I'll talk about the leaning in a moment! Okay, Rabban Gamliel. Okay, after we do Dayenu in poem form, then we do Dayenu in prose form, then we go to Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel has three props, and we have to talk about each of them, or we're not Yotze. Which is followed by Behold Dor Vador, Chai Vadam Leharod Etzmo Kilu Yitam Yitzrayim, which is followed by a paragraph that says Leficha Chayavim Lehodot. Lehodot, Lehalel, Leshabeach, Lefer, Leramem. Etc. Etc. Which leads into the next part of the. It's not really the next section because we don't sing it in the song at the beginning. Does everyone have that tune, or do you have another tune?
Yeah, I have that.
Are there other tunes?
There's a Sfar tune. It's great.
You'll teach that to me later.
I
might know somebody who knows another tune, and this is the correct tune. So that's just I want to confirm that. I want to confirm the brewing. Okay, so and that leads into Hallel. Great. So what did we notice that surprised Gavi?
Well, I mean, just a couple different things. First of all, if Rav Shmuel is machloket, this is my question a while ago, if Rav Shmuel is machloket is only that we're machil big nude, then why don't we just start with Avadim and Obdei Avodah Zarah and then just keep going? Why do we have to put in the Shevach at the end? And then, because if Avadim Hayinu is the Shevach for the whole Haggadah.
Can you answer your question?
No.
Okay.
And also, which is like a related question,
I thought it might be too apparent.
Why do we keep going after Avadim Hayinu if we're Messiah, the Shevach right there?
Those are great questions. Paste them on the wall. Can you? I'm not gonna make you write them. But okay. So Gavi wants to know, and you do too probably. Why do we have like one big Shevach at the end if we have little Shevachs in the middle?
Or other way around. Avadim Hayinu makes way more sense. That's not
okay, and why do we have a Shmuel Haggadah, then we have a Rav Haggadah, and then we have two other instances of Shevach?
Yeah,
what
I get why we're arguing about the Gnut, Rav and Shmuel, because that's a bunch of machloket, but if everyone agrees on the Shevach, just leave it out and just do it up.
Gnut for a second, you're right there, you're almost about to taste it. Okay, we have one Haggadah in the first column, we have a second Haggadah in the second column, and then we have two more instances of Shevach, which maybe indicates that there are two more series that look like this, meaning there are four times overall in the Haggadah where we pause and say Shevach. There are four instances of Shevach. I've showed you where they are.
What are the other two? Rav, Shmuel, Avadim, Hayinu, and what's the one in the middle that I missed?
Dayenu. And Hallel.
Oh, Hallel, okay.
Dayenu and Hallel are right, so we have four series of Shevach. Wouldn't it be cool, ask the rabbi, if those other two series, in addition to ending with Shevach, began with the same thing that the first two series began? What do the other two series begin with, Rav and Shmuel? They begin with questions. They begin with questions. Nope, questions. Manishana is a question, and...
She'ela Gnut Shevach.
She'ela Gnut Shevach, yes. Very good. Okay, so wouldn't it be cool if we had questions as well to go with?
I mean, we kind of do here.
Well, we don't have
the Minines.
Sorry?
Give the Minine the whole game with the.
Okay, but.
The bottom of paragraph.
Okay.
But
This is what I need from you. I actually thought about this. I was like, this is amazing. I do have crayons at home, and markers, and oils, and like all kinds of. You know, etch-a-sketches probably wouldn't help as much. Okay. A lot of coloring, multiple colors, but I forgot all of them. But it appears to me that all of you have a pen. I want you to do the following. Box for me the questions, Shmuel's question and Rav's question. Right, so Shmuel's question is Manishtana.
Rav's is Arba Banim.
And Rav's is Arba Banim, right? Those are both instances of questions. And then maybe this is up to you. If you want to do a curly Q for the Shevach part, or you want to do like a circle, maybe an oval, okay? Or maybe like a dotted box for the Shevach of Rav and Shmuel.
Wait, Rav's the first one or Shmuel's the first one?
Shmuel's the first one, sorry. Shmuel v'Rav.
Baruch Amakam and Baruch Shomerim Tassalichba.
Gavin, how's you doing?
I did.
Okay, now do the same for the other instance of Shabbat. Okay, we have Kama Malot Tovot Lemakom Aleinu, that's Dayenu, that's the Shabbat, and we also have Lefichach. Oh man, this has Hashem's name on it. All right. Lefichach Anachnu Chayvim is the next instance of Shabbat. And we are lamenting that in our series 3 and series 4, we do not have questions, except for the fact that. We're lamenting that we have 4 instances of Shevach, but we don't have 4 instances
of Knut and
of questions.
Why are we?
But we do, Shoshi.
Why are we talking about Knut?
But we do.
That's equally as troubling.
Rav and Shmuel, let me take your question because it's not going to serve its purposes down the line. So I'm going to answer it now. Okay. Rav and Shmuel are responding to the Mishnah's demand that you have to do Gnut to Shevach.
Right.
That's true. But that clearly doesn't happen in the rest of the Haggadah. Oi, I take it back. I take it back. Thank you for helping me understand that. Would you not say that Gnut Shevach happens in the farmer's declaration? Arami Ovet Avi is not a Gnut. Vayered Mitzrayma is not a Gnut. Okay, hold on. Pesach Matzah Maror. That's the third Haggadah.
Okay.
Pesach Matzah Maror also has Gnut and Shevach. We also talk about transitioning from the bad times to the good. Okay? We don't read about the Maror? Do we not? We don't read about running out of Egypt? Okay? There are Gnut and Shevach cycles throughout the Haggadah. It's not
there's
one.
There's 4 Haggadahs here. That's what you're.
Stop giving away the punchlines! Yes, there are! Except what's missing, Gavi?
The She'ela for...
Yes! Can you find... Okay, good. There are 4 series. There are 4 mini Haggadahs here. Except Haggadah number 3 and Haggadah number 4, they both have Gnut Shevach, they both have Hoda'ah, but they do not have questions / Shoshi. Say it.
They do.
Do you know what the questions are?
Well,
you know where you okay because you know where the Shevach ends for number 2 and number 3. You know where the Haggadah begins for 3 and 4. So Haggadah number 3 starts at the little circle that says 3. No one noticed that? It's such a dead giveaway.
Yeah, I
just... Umad ma bikesh levan ha'arami la'asot le'akov avinu is a...
Question.
Great!
It's a command.
It's a question within a command. Yes, it is.
Yeah, I was like, "Say ma colon ma bikesh."
Yeah, it's on the original. Okay. I didn't put it in.
That's why it's in
Rev Ramon's secretary put it in.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know about that one.
It's clearly a question. Whatever. You know what? Let that be the one, Kasha.
Yeah.
Let that be the one, Kasha, on what's otherwise a beautiful crystalline structure. Okay, that's a question. Are there any other questions in Haggadah number 4? Are you so sure that there are no questions?
No.
Why don't you control F question marks?
Shuma.
Yes. Yes. And yes. And thank you for laughing at my joke. There are 3 questions. 1 for Pesach, 1 for Matzah, 1 for Maror. Pesach, Shayim, Avtenu, Ochlim, Bezman, Shabit, Amikdash, Ayakayam, Al Shuma? Question mark. Matzah, Zo, Shanu, Ochlim, Al Shuma? Why do we eat it? Maror, Zeh, Shanu, Ochlim, Al Shuma? Question mark. So use your colorful crayons or your otherwise clever way of indicating that we have question set 3 and question set 4. We have question set 1 through 4. We have Gnut Shevach, i.e. story time. A story that is presented in contrasts. A story that's presented in a development and progression towards from something bad to something good. And we have 4 instances of breaking out into Shevach. We're so animated by the experience we break out into Shevach. Here's the question that's on your mind. Gosh, Magid was so long to begin with, it could have been 1/4 as long. Maybe that's what you're thinking. Okay. But I think this actually... So we started off with ideas that... May have been mine. They might have been ideas I heard somewhere else, and I can't remember because I didn't give the shear last year, unlike what Abby thinks that happened. Okay. Then.
Can you just go through really quick where's the Gnut and the Shabbat for the mill?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. We're going to run through the Haggadah one more time, and then we're going to talk about the Haggadah. We're going to talk about how we're going to talk about the Haggadah. I'm kidding with you. Okay. We start with Halachmania is a late insertion. Mani Shana is Shmuel's questions. Avadim Hayinu is Shmuel's story. Ayi Gnut Shavach goes all the way till Yemei Chayach Lehavi Limot HaMashiach switches to Shavach Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu. That's Shmuel Shavach. Then we begin with Rav's questions, Keneged Arba Banim Dibra Torah, four questions, really three. Rav's story, Mitchilo Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hayavateinu, which leads to Rav's Shevach, V'hisha Amta Lavateinu V'lanu, followed by Tse'u Mad, which is question set three, followed by Arami Oved Avi, which is the beginning of story number three, followed by Dayinu in column number four, so story number three is the longest one, thank that person. Dayinu in column number four is the Shevach, which is immediately followed by Rabban Gamliel. This one's a little less clean, but you know, if you do this with crayon or with highlighter, you can see there's like a question, story, question, story, question, story, Shevach series there. Okay, so you basically essentially have four Haggadahs.
Wait, where do you think the new are within the Sheila Gamliel?
Yeah. Clearly, Rabban Gamliel is to be understood a little bit more broadly, right? It's not. Well, I don't say clearly. You could say, yes, there's like a Gnut Shevach series inside, or you could say that Rabban Gamliel was less taken by the... maybe he had a dispute with the author of the Mishnah that said Gnut Shevach. He himself is a Tana. He doesn't have to listen. I mean, okay. I mean, you know, look at the Mishnah. We have... he's not actually in the Mishnah. He's in the other Mishnah. If you look at your source sheet, he's a different Mishnah. Suck that in so you'd see it. It's not actually part of the... I didn't give you the full Makor.
Oh, so he's Pashu Cholik on Tama.
You could say that, or you could say he's part of Gnut Shevach, or you could say that Gnut Shevach is a way of telling a story, and Rabban Gamliel tells a story a different way. Whatever you want to do. Okay, there are four Haggadahs. Why are there four Haggadahs?
Four sons.
We can easily get away with four is a great number. There's a really important number four, and then you can go to the Maharal and look up what number four means, you know, to Maharal and Kol Torah Kula, and go home, and be done. That's true. However, there's four. We at least know from Shmuel and Rav that there are two different stories being told, right? That much is clear up front. Shmuel and Rav are telling two different kinds of stories, and they argue that their stories. They argue that you have to tell different ones, right? Shmuel is saying that Avadim Hayinu LeParo is the story, right? And Rav is saying, no, the story is that we used to be Ovdei Avodah Zarah. So you can slice the machlokas a couple ways. You know, you can say, like, Shmuel's taking the long view. Kidding. Shmuel's taking the short view, right? You want to talk about Yitzhak Mitzrayim? Let's talk about Mitzrayim. Let's get in Egypt. And Rav is taking the long view. No, this story needs to be understood in context. You could say that for Rav, the Gnut is our own. Is our own shame, and Shmuel's, the Gnut, is not our shame, but rather the Egyptians who enslaved us, right? Or you could say, you know, that is answer number two. Or you could say, and I think this is the way, like, what I was taught when I was little, that Shmuel is saying that the shame is a physical socioeconomic, but let's make it physical shame, and Rav is saying, no, it's a spiritual shame, right? Slaves is shameful? Like, no, slavery is not shameful. Being an Ovid of Odazara, being a pagan, is shameful. And we descend from pagans. They're clearly arguing over two different stories. And by the way, funny times, look at the questions. Manishana Halilazad, what kind of questions are we asking? What are the questions about? I see chametz and matzah. I see...
Physical
questions! What will I do when you graduate? It's true.
It's actually
new
problems. I think I'm going to have to take your kids
too. It's a mutual problem. Okay, in Mani Shana, all the questions are physical. Hey, I noticed this thing with my eyes. Hey, I noticed this thing, you know, in front of me. And if you look at the four sons, it's, what are these dinim? Or, what is it that God means to you? They're all spiritual questions. Or mazot, which, you know, who knows what that means. Okay, but they're...
Pretty spiritual question.
could be like the most spiritual question. Like, he's meditating. He's like,
mazot. This is for Rav?
That's Rav's question.
Maybe the
okay. So Shmuel and Rav are telling two different kinds of stories, right? One's telling a spiritual story, one's telling a physical story. And it could be that story number three and story number four are different disputations. Hold on, hold the questions. There are different disputations about... I'm actually going to... You know, I'll make my point, then we'll open up for questions, and I'll recap. I'm sorry, Shosh. I apologize. I'm hot. Okay. Look with me at the Ramban. Now Jared's happy. Okay. Okay, Mishnah Torah. Chametz Matzah, the seventh chapter is about the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. If you look at number two, halacha number two, mitzvah l'hodiya l'banim v'afilu lo sha'alu, it's a mitzvah to teach your children, even if they didn't ask, shenemar v'igata l'vencha, right, that's the Tam one, that's the Shein HaDei L'Yishol one, l'fida ator shel ben aviv l'milamdo, and according to the understanding level, the level of knowledge of the child, that's what the parent teaches. Ketzad, how's that? Im haya katan otipesh omer lo Bini, kulanu hainu avadim kmo shifcha zo oke evet ze b'mitzrayim. Which is kind of interesting, the like Rambam's being sort of like egalitarian, switching the like, you know, she or he. I just like noticed that, and then finding like she or he.
But I mean, I guess it depends
like,
who's in the room.
You know, maybe, yeah, that or, okay, whatever.
Or he's being a feminist.
I'm saying, like, he's being a feminist, but like, I don't know if you want to take that home, that's like, shifcha and evet, like... Like when it comes to slavery, then we. Anyway, I'm pointing out it's not me. It's okay. I thought that was odd. Kmo eved zeh b'Mitzrayim, we're at Brennus. Uvalayla zeh pada otanu hakadosh baruch hu. I'm just thinking like someone's listening to this on Y Torah and like how did I get into this? Uvalayla zeh pada otanu hakadosh baruch hu ve'yosin lecherut. Okay. So if the child is small, so then you say like, listen, my child. We were once slaves, like that slave that you know, in Egypt, and on this night, I mean, Rambam's living in Cairo, I'm sure slavery is alive and well, and we were redeemed on this exact night, and we were taken to freedom. And but if the child's older, so then you take a different approach, then you go in different, you talk about what happened on that night. So no matter where the child is, no matter what the education level of the child or the understanding level of the child, you have to push up a level. You have to push the child on their level, what's appropriate for them. What's fun here is it's not just, okay, the child's too small, I'm not going to tell the child. But they're not going to understand yet. Or they won't get this. It's a different tack. We're saying, let's change the approach. The child's too small, so we'll approach it this way. The child's a little... older, we'll take it this way. The Gemara says clearly that if there are no children, so then the adults have to test each other and quiz each other and ask each other questions and push each other. And if there's no plural adults or just an adult in the room, even if Zaken and a Chacham and a Navi, etc., then that person has to drill herself, and push herself or himself to new levels of understanding. Meaning, it's not enough to push ourselves to... You don't change what you teach, you change how you teach it. And that's our lesson for the Seder, the Maggid, is the most brilliant, intergenerational, dramatic storytelling device that Chazal ever put together for us. It's not enough to sit down and read through 12 chapters of Exodus. You wouldn't get anything out of it. Instead, we have to present the Haggadah in a way that will push all of us in the room and the next generation in a way that's new. So if you have somebody, and these are things that we're waking up to now, right? Those of you who are in the classroom, like, oh, some children are visual children. Some children are oral, A-U-R-A-L children. Some children need to, you know, touch things with their hands. Okay, so some kids need to hear a story about slavery. And some kids need to hear a story about spiritual slavery, right? Some kids will relate to that. Some kids need like the drilling down and they want to like wave their thumbs. You know, okay, you're like the smarty pants, so we'll give you psukim, darshan. Okay, that's number three. Number three is like, let's go through all the psukim. And then number four is, this kid needs visual props. And our declaration at the Haggadah is that we do all of them. And we're willing to take all the routes in order to achieve the final message, which is a deeper intellectual, spiritual, and experiential understanding of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Any questions?
Can you guys roll with them? What's the MO of if like Shmuel is like basically like support Gashmi and Rav like support Rokhani, what's the MO of the other two? Of the Tanakhama and Rambam Gamliel?
Oh, I mean Kenny Rath, no, it's not written anywhere, but right. Kenny Rath, that Tehomad is like a very someone who's technical, who likes psukim, who wants to see it inside. Show it to me inside, mm-hmm. Rabbi. right? And then Pesach Matzah Maror, Rabban Gamliel is like literally putting up props. He has to pick up the Matzah and the Maror, and Rabban Gamliel has to pick up the Pesach, but we don't have a Pesach, so we don't pick it up anymore. Yes?
I understand that in some cases, arguably, stale mat is a little bit for the Zionist at the Seder, meaning it's the speech that we say when we go to the Beit HaMikdash, and then it ends with saying, and the best thing that God did for us is he brought us to Israel. It's not just at the end of slavery.
Right, but the beautiful thing about that, or the tragic thing about that, is that the Vidui Bikurim is not four psukim long, it's five psukim long. Right, we spoke about this last night, that there are a lot of hidden fifths,
right.
and I think, I mean, except for the four sons, the fifth son is like the unrelated. It's a great drasha, but unrelated, but the other missing fifths are very tzioni or Beit HaMikdash related, right? The fifth pasuk that's not here is that God brought us to Israel, to this land. The fifth kos is v'havienu el ha'aretz hazot. Sorry? V'heviti, sorry. Right, it's God speaking. V'heviti, the fifth question that we knock out that's in the Mishnah is, why do we eat basar tzalil? So it's things we can only do in the Beit HaMikdash. That's a thought. Any questions?
Yeah, also one more thing. I think I'm going to echo Jared's point before. In Seil Mad, it's kind of pushing it. That's a question. It's a question, but like the rest of the questions in the context of the Seder are like, hey, let's inspire the kids to ask questions. And this
yeah,
is like, hey kids, why did Lovin try to kill us? Like, why would the kids have ever asked why did Lovin try to kill us in the middle of the Seder?
Got me, the three others is just the me.
I thought he was going to say. This is amazing.
Nicely.
I told him it was going to
happen.
You know?
No, without.
If there are three others, space over quarterly, you know.
No, let me put it this way. Besides the fact that I fed that to Jared, put it this way.
It's
awkwardly phrased as a question. That doesn't need to be phrased as a question. Put it that way. How about that? Besides the point that I fed to Jared, that like everything works out besides that, why don't you like go home? No. I'll take a step further. Why put it in that language anyway? Why talk about Lavan? Why not just get down to Aramio Veravi? Like,
no,
now
like,
let's
like,
begin learning
Psukim. Begging for like a shear, like oh, why would it have been that Lavan would even have popped into the minds of the kids? There must be
forget
some
the,
reason.
No, forget Lavan, forget Lavan. The fact that we pose a question that no one was thinking of. Or we pose a topic of interest.
That's the kasha. That's what's so weird.
I'm saying that's what fits. Meaning, we pose a topic of interest that no one was actually wondering about. What we could have done is skip that paragraph. We could have skipped Se'ul Mad and jumped to Aramio Veravi. Or had another interest. Yeah, that's my right.
There would have been no Shiloh.
There would have, it's like,
no, I agree that it's a Shiloh. I just think it's kind of like...
Oh, there wouldn't have been a Shiloh. Right, no, that's plugged in there in order to maintain the structure.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's weird because like you're right that it seems so obvious when you look at it this way that that's like... clearly there.
No, that's Jared's point.
To have like a petitza. Right. I agree with that, but like...
I'm making a separate
actually
point.
Actually analyzing the content is like, is that really a Shiloh? It is, but like, that's like a terrible question for the...
No,
like,
I'm saying it's great because... I'm saying it's great because it's a fourth Shiloh. It's a Shiloh that the Baal HaGadah sticks in and it was on no one's mind.
Therefore, it must be some sort of Shiloh.
It's canned. It's put there in order to maintain the structure.
Yeah, I agree with your answer. That just is like unsettled me. Like that's, I'm like not the call of that.
All right.
But like that totally makes sense. It's just like weird that would happen.
I'll take it. Any other questions? Quick recap. I made this last year. A couple hundred people have seen it, and now I want to do tshuva a little bit. Maybe a couple hundred people will listen this year. Who knows? I don't think it's wrong, but I think like there are a couple things that were missing on it that were bugging me. One was Rabban Gamliel is clearly more important. He's a Mishnah as much as the Arami Ovid Avi is a Mishnah. So why is it gray here? What is transition really a part of the Magid? There were a couple things that seemed weird. There are also a couple of things that seem weird in general. One is you know, Rav Chaim has this great chiddush that we do question-answer, but where exactly is the question-answer? And then there's a lot of the Haggadah, also, Rav and Shmuel have a machlokas that's great. Usually we pass them like Rav or like Shmuel. When do we pass them like Rav and Shmuel? Especially when, like...
When it's liturgy.
When it's liturgy? Is there another example?
Never mind.
Oh.
Continue with your...
Okay. When do we ever pass them like Rav and Shmuel? Especially where we happen to be particularly sensitive to not dragging on, or at least some... Whatever, doesn't... I don't want to make this point. I'll make this point afterwards. When do we ever pass them like Rav and Shmuel? Point number two, point number three, I can't remember. Well, I mean, those are good points, but there are other things that are going on. Anyway, it turns out that if you look at the Haggadah follows a really simple and predictable pattern that I guaranteed you, and I hope it's true, you'd be able to see with your eyes closed. We begin with a question, followed by a story that more or less follows a Gnut Teshevach pattern, and ends with a Shevach. Ends with a praise to Hashem. We have Shmuel's Haggadah, Rav's Haggadah, we have the Tse Umad, the Dorash Arami Ovid Avi Haggadah, followed by Rabban Gamliel's Haggadah. And hopefully, I mean, seemingly, the reason that we have four different Haggadahs is to reinforce for us at the Seder the notion that we have to take every avenue, every educational avenue possible to inspire our children and ourselves to think about Yetziat Mitzrayim, to understand, to grok Yetziat Mitzrayim, and ultimately to ask more questions. Have a redeeming and confusing Pesach.